Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Legion of Three. Tonight, we're going to do The Serpent Beneath.
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, and one more thing, so we can get it out of the way. Spoilers, and there may be potty language. Right, Rob?
Occasionally. Potty language?
Yeah. It's not safe.
It is the Alpha Legion.
It is. Yes. They're notorious cursors, yes. I'm Rob.
I'm Glenn.
I'm John.
All right. So yes, The Serpent Beneath by Rob Sanders. It was collected in the Primark's book collection of short stories and novellas, mostly novellas. They're pretty long. From 2015. I think it was released prior to that in some special edition. I don't know. I got it in the Primark's book. I don't know about the rest of you guys.
Same.
All right. It is about the Alpha Legion. They are some duplicitous bastards. See there?
They're awesome.
Body language. And it is set pretty early in the heresy, although we're not exactly sure. There is a time. It's 806-44, which is, I don't know what the hell that is.
But that's Hydra elapsed time. That's not.
Yeah, that's not any other
standard, you know, Terran time.
Okay, so I have no idea. It's
so
early.
So would you say that this story is happening early?
Well, because it's post-Legion, but Legion happens before Istvan 4, doesn't it? Or Istvan 5, rather.
Yeah, but this is like happening right before the White Scars learn about the duplicity, which is near the end.
Early. No, the White Scars, because nobody knew what side they were on when the chessboard was being laid out. So you've got, you know, your nine traitor legions, and you've got a couple of, I'm not sure where they fall yet. You have the White Scars. You kind of have the Dark Angels, because in the very beginning, nobody could get a hold of the Dark Angels. Nobody was sure what was going on with them. And who was another one that was kind of an outlier?
The Blood Angels were sent off to deal.
Yeah, because they were thought possibly lost. So it wasn't necessarily that they went traitor. It was just that they went way, way out on the Eastern Fringe and disappeared for a little while.
Right.
And that's early on. That's all around Istvan V and Kalth. But before really kind of the Shadow Crusade takes off and all this kind of stuff, because by that point, the White Scars were basically forced to show their hand, and they showed their hand for the Emperor, and of course lost, what was it, John, a third of the Legion to the Mazar, what were they called?
The Sagar Mazan.
Sagar Mazan. Basically the penitents who have to go and prove their worth by dying.
Right. Yeah.
And they were giving a couple of legions what for with their tactics before they started to get really ground down. So there was a long period of time where they were just harrying the sides and flanks of Horus's rebellion as they tried to make their way to Terra.
That happens before Molech. So, I mean, that, again, is pretty early on, because it's Molech where Horus starts kind of the march to Earth, which still takes a year and a half, 2 years. Anyway.
Right. So to me, that's more like at the middle of the heresy, not at the beginning.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure. To me, it's when everybody is showing their colors. The Alpha Legion shows their colors, I guess, really, when they interfere with the White Scars. But no, the Alpha Legion's also on Istvan 5 before this.
Right.
They are, but you also got to remember that in parallel with this, it's after the Space Wolves got sent after the Thousand Suns.
At Prospero.
Right. And while they're licking their wounds from that, they get cornered by the Alpha Legion.
Alpha Legion. Yet another.
The Alpha Legion has cornered the Space Wolves at the Alexis Nebula, and they've also, once the contents of the Serpent Beneath happen, the Alpha Legion also has another fleet that tries to corner the White Scars at Chondax. Unsuccessfully. Spoilers.
Right.
Only because the White Scars have super ships.
Well, yeah. Because they got the need for speed.
Yes.
Right.
Take off these shields. We won't be needing these, boys.
That's right.
All right. Let's try and get focused here. We're all over the map. All right. So, this story.
Serpent Beneath.
This story features one of the two Primarchs, primarily. The other one is only seen kind of in a small capacity. Glenn, tell us about it.
Okay, so Omegon, who is aboard the flagship Upsilon, being commanded by Sheed Ranko of the First Company. He's a Lanarian Terminator captain. But Omegon is talking to Eshion, who is a former Psyker, and Escheon is in charge of the Tenebrae 950 array. Omegon's uneasy about what's going on with the Tenebrae because there's been word that there's a leak, that someone has betrayed the Alpha Legion within the Legion. If this is true or not, we don't know. So Omegon is trying to get more information from Escheon about what his standings are, what his powers are, you know, what his troops are, their rotation, all this stuff, so he can make a assessment of what exactly he needs to do about the Tenebrae 950 array.
So a couple of thoughts that come pretty early on in this story, in the first page. He calls, or the description is Escheon as pellucid, which I had never heard before. It was not a word that I was familiar with. I looked it up. It basically means like translucent or clear. So on the one hand, he's talking to him hologrammatically. On the other hand, because this is the Alpha Legion, I look at it as he can see right through this guy. You know, this is a Primarch talking to a guy who he is completely aware of his strengths and weaknesses and capabilities and you know, weak and problems, basically. So I thought that was kind of a really cool. And again, I could be reading into something the author did not intend, but I kind of doubt it because of the way he writes the Alpha Legion so well. Second thing, and this is jumping ahead a little bit, the alien device that they're using is Blackstone. This is a piece of Blackstone that they have because it's calming the warp. I think this may be the first instance we've ever heard of Blackstone, although possibly they've put it into some of the old Cadia stuff in 40K, and I haven't gone back to see it. Otherwise, it's been retconned, because now in current 40K, Blackstone is a big deal. Carry on.
So the other thing that we also find out about Escheon here is that Escheon used to be a librarian and still has access to his powers. It says, what does it say? Escheon no longer wore the robes of the Librarius, instead opting for the plain attire of a company legionnaire. As one of the Legion's senior psychers, he had been an obvious choice to oversee the operation of the new Imperial technology, even if his status as a librarian had remained a secret.
Which is weird, because if we've already revealed ourselves as traitors, why are they still following Nicaea?
Right.
Okay, carry on.
So I think that brings us back to the whole, all right, are all of the Alpha Legion gone to chaos, or have only some of the Alpha Legion gone to chaos? So, you know, like some of the other chapters. But anyways, so Omegon, he will praise Escheon for his vigilance and mistrust of being cautious and not liking what he's hearing, because not trusting in Agoramus, who is an artisan Emphyr, Agoramus. He is a mechanicum, and he's the guy who knows the most about the Tenebrae 950 array. And Escheon just says flat out, I don't like him. So we continue on with...
What was that?
I'm sorry, I turned the page.
Jeez! So, did you get hit with a phone book?
It's a holy tome.
Yeah. For Glenn, it is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, Agoramus.
Yeah, so Agoramus is taking liberties with the slave stock. In order to power the Tenebrae 950 array, they need psychers. And
which Escheon's is interesting, also, too, because that means they're basically feeding psychers to this thing, kind of like the Emperor. Later on.
Exactly.
Like yeah. The throne and the...
And that's why they're running into the Sisters of Silence because in their black ships, because they also, you know, they're running into the Sisters who are also trying to get psychers for the Emperor.
Well, but I mean, they're not feeding, at this point, they're not feeding the Emperor, but they do use them. A, they round them up for safety's sake, and then B, some of them become sanctioned, and C, some of them become astropaths for various purposes. Sanctioned psychers, even in 30K, are a thing. But we learn later that they are being sacrificed to the Golden Throne, but that happens after... Well, I guess it's already happened, because Magnus has already warned the Emperor that Horus has turned rogue, so the Emperor is already... Boy, spoiler warning! He's already stuck on the throne. And so they're already using sacrifices. This comes up, I know, if not in some of the other books, is a topic in the Siege of Terra books. The Black Sisters are, you know, pulling in psychers.
Mm-hmm. It's one of the inconsistencies with the Imperium. They can't stand psychers, but they're run by the most powerful psyker ever.
And they can't live without them.
And they can't live without them, right.
You have Astropaths. That's kind of important. You have Navigators. They're kind of important. You have Librarians. Yeah, we don't really care about them. Never mind.
Right. So Omegon, once again, presses Escheon and says, I need all the data on everything for the base. And Escheon informs him that Janik is in charge of the security. And so Janik is Avaris Janik, commander of the Tenebrae 950 installation. And so...
And he's like a veteran Alpha Legion. He's been known
right.
as a serious-minded Alpha Legion for a long time. And so later on, we find out that that becomes a problem, that they're not sure he's so good at what he does, it's going to be an issue for what they have to plan for.
Right. And then Escheon asks if he can speak freely to Omegon, and Omegon says always. And Escheon tells Omegon that he believes that the Legion has or will be taking a wrong turn or a misstep, that they're going down a dark path. And Omegon informs him that, you know, I think you see one of the many possibilities of the Alpha Legion. And, you know, we're taking all accounts into consideration.
And, you know, a thought about this. Okay, so he's not a Librarius, but he's obviously using his powers of precognition. And Omegon has no complaint about it. He doesn't say, what are you doing?
Right. Well, that's a side benefit of being in the area of the Tenebrae 950. It's
right.
So calm.
It increases him. Right.
Yeah. It's so calm that he's never been able to pass his, you know, send his thoughts out further. So it's pretty interesting.
Yeah. So he's in this becalmed area of the warp, and his powers are somehow magnified by the Tenebrae installation.
Which is also calming the warp.
Yes. Right.
Yeah. So it's those two things are connected.
But he hasn't told anybody. He says, no, I only confide in you, Lord Omegon. So, and I am listening, brother.
Mistake.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I do not doubt your capabilities, enhanced under these special circumstances. I fear, however, that you glimpse the journey and know not the destination. Trust in this. There are many futures, many eventualities, many paths that the Alpha Legion might take. It is our enemies failing to see only what is presented to them in plain terms. Their undoing is to be blind to our myriad methods. So basically he's either blowing smoke up his ass, telling him, you know, don't worry about it. And what the future that you see of Alpha Legionnaires killing Alpha Legionnaires inside the Tenebrae installation is just nothing to worry about.
That's just pillow talk.
That's just, yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Why they keep calling that guy Omegon, you shouldn't worry about at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Sheed Ranko emerges from the rear of the chamber, and he's almost, they quote instantly, he is almost as big as Omegon. He's the captain of the Lunarian Terminator Squad and master of the strike cruiser Upsilon. Ranko thinks Escheon is going to be a problem.
But so, why? Why does he think that?
In my opinion, that he's a leak, that he's seeing a possible, he's going to talk to somebody. Right now he says he hasn't talked to anybody, but he's going to talk to somebody.
So here's a weird question, and this is somewhat speculation, but Glenn, I think you're up to the job. Why does Omegon fear so much word of this getting out? What is it? I mean, besides the fact that they're doing something that's really, really off the books, that, you know, we've never heard of anything quite like this station before from any other chapter, from any other part of the nascent Imperium. Mm-hmm. Why is he so freaked out that it's been compromised and it's got to go? Now, obviously, we know a little bit more than this later, but he does kind of share his concerns with Shade.
He does, but I think it's even more than that. I think Omegon's not being entirely honest, because if we go with what we've learned later on in just the new Alpharius book, that's Alpharius. That's not Omegon.
Super spoiler warning.
Yes, super duper spoiler warning. So now Alpharius, who's done so much for the Emperor and infiltrated other legions for the Emperor, the first found Primarch, you wouldn't think he'd fully, you know, he would turn against his father. So he wants the Tenebrae gone so the White Scars can find out about what's going on, so they can get back to help.
But the first found Primarch was Horus.
Nope, not according to the last book.
That's all lies.
All right. Let's stay on target here. I know it changes a lot. There's a lot of things that it suddenly make a different sense.
Did they plan this, or was coincidence, or it's all a lie?
It's all something.
All right.
They're lies upon lies. All
right. So one of the things that they say there is Hydra Dominatus, which I think means like Hydra overall.
Yeah, Uberalis.
There you go. Hydra over everybody. There you go.
Yeah. Multi heads over everybody.
Omegon needs a favor. He's going to need to infiltrate the Alpha Legion. And
which is hard when everybody looks like you.
Exactly. And Ranko says, "Hey, look, I got the guys for you. It's Sigma Squad."
Yeah. Right. If you need some people who are evil and willing to kill their own kind, have I got the crew for you.
Kind of surprised they're not destroyers.
Yeah, right. Well, it's just everybody in the Alpha Legion is basically a recon marine, sort of, kind of.
Right. Yeah, and Omegon does say he does not have any time to do any kind of, you know, intelligence or anything like that on it. He just needs it wiped out. So they don't care if there truly is a leak or not. They think there's a leak. We just need it wiped out. We just gotta get this.
We're gonna fix that leak with heavy prejudice.
Yeah. There's a pipe leaking in the house. Let's just go and knock down the whole house. It'll be fine. Right. We'll start all over again.
Hey,
we'll fix that leak.
There was a spider.
That's right. We've seen that meme, little girl. I saw a spider, so I torched the house.
Yeah.
Nice.
So the Sigma Squad is currently running interference on the 915th Expeditionary Fleet. The main job that they're doing right now is they're rerouting orcs on that planet and making them merge up and get into bigger and bigger packs to help bog down the White Scars and make them fight grinder missions as opposed to their swift assault missions.
Yeah, they're kind of making a little wah. They're kind of like, okay, these orcs are not going to stand up to the White Scars without some help. So we are going to kind of snowball them together into being a problem for the White Scars instead of being surgically struck to pieces. It's right. Kind of funny that they're helping the WA grow by killing, yeah. You know, maiming, killing, all kinds of good stuff.
Right. And Captain Ranko also suggests that he's going to need a psyker, and pulling one from the Legion is not going to work. He's going to need somebody special. And he's heard word about a person named Zalmagundi on a hive world of Drusilla.
We got to get the band together.
And Ranko says, you're going to need someone on the inside. Omegon informs him, I already got the guy.
So, all right, let's pause for a second. Let's talk about this. So this is the beginning of our heist movie, right? This is, you know, this is our target. This is what we got to go and do. This is what we're up against. We're up against our own kind. We know what they're going to do. They know what we're going to do. There's going to be a lot of duplicitousness because we're the Alpha Legion. We need a strike team. We got that. We need an X Factor. This is Zalmagundi. We need a way in. We're going to go get the tech priest that is so beloved by the psyker, Escheon.
Escheon, yep.
So yeah, we're building, we're sort of snowballing this together into a heist movie. Although it's not stealing, it's destroying, but still it's the same general idea. And it definitely does have that kind of Ocean's 11 momentum to it.
Yep.
A couple of side missions. You got to do this. This person's locked up. We'll break them free. And then we go and get the psyker. This is Zalmagundi. John, tell us about it.
About who?
Hold on. Let's not jump too far too fast. Let's finish this alpha part, okay?
There's a little bit more that happens here that's important.
Right. So, you know, I'm going to read here. Omegon took a pair of chalices from the tray. He offered one to Ranko. Thank you for your assistance with this, old friend. There are few to whom I could turn with this. At your service, always, the captain said, raising the chalice for a toast to mission success and to necessary sacrifices. The pair drank. Ranko pulled the rim from his lips, thoughtfully. He found himself looking down into the depths of the chalice. You know what that is? Omegon asked. Yes, my lord, the captain answered for a moment. Then you know what it is that I ask of you. Ranko downed the rest. What you ask of all of us, the captain said. Everything.
Bum, bum, bum.
What you ask of us all.
Yeah, what you ask of us all. Yeah.
Everything.
Blind devotion.
All right, spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
What's in the glass?
Well, the glass, inside the glass is Omegon's blood.
Or.
And why would
technically, Alpharius' blood.
technically Alpharius's blood. So he's now been shared all the thoughts and memories, and it says it makes him look more, even more like Omegon or Alpharius.
Where does it say that? I missed that part.
It says it at the very end of the story.
Okay. All right.
So I want to take up at Beta.
Yeah, that's
where. All right. We'll talk about Beta. All right. So we flip to the squad that is down on the surface of
Themis 4.
Themis 4. Thank you.
Which is part of the cluster in
Chondax.
Near Chondax.
All right. So we're on the planet of Themis 4. We are following Squad 6. Squad Sigma. Six Sigma is not what we're looking for. That's unrelated. As they are basically manipulating the orcs into being a bigger problem for the White Scars. The whole point is that you have a squad of Alpha Legion tying up companies worth of White Scars, and the White Scars don't even know it. They think that they're all fighting the orcs, and they don't understand why the orcs are a bigger problem than they originally assessed them to be.
They keep trying to wipe them out in different places, and they keep popping back up in odd places that don't follow normal orc behavior.
And, you know, in addition to that, they are fighting the world itself. The world of Themis 4 is slowly turning itself inside out. Like, there's all kinds of volcanic activity, magma flows, lava, blah, blah, blah. It's not a happy place. You know, why the orcs are here is always a mystery because they pick terrible real estate. So we see a little bit, basically, of how special forces like these Alpha Legions are, this Squad Sigma, you know, is scaling rocks and they're staying out of sight and they're doing all this kind of stuff because they're desperate to not let the White Scars know that they're behind this. At this point, the White Scars have no idea what's going on in the greater galaxy. They have no idea the Heresy is on. They have no idea the Alpha Legion is out to get them. And this squad is making sure that stays that way. You know, they do not do anything that would expose themselves. They're just, you know, screwing with the orcs and making the life harder for the White Scars. They're not really, the White Scars aren't really losing a lot of guys, it talks about. It's slowing them down. It's taking longer than it should, which is perfect because time is very much a resource of the Horus Heresy. It's a recurring theme that the longer it takes for the reinforcements to pull themselves together, the better it is for Horus.
Right. We also know from some of the other stories, the other side of this story is, you know, the White Scars are, they like this job. It's well suited for them to go and hunt these orcs down. And they like this whole style of war, but they are getting tired of being here because they're used to like hitting a place, wiping them out, and moving on. And like the guys at the squad level are like, man, we've been here a really long time. I wonder when we're gonna move out. When are we gonna get orders to leave?
What else can we kill out there besides these damn orcs?
Yeah, but you got to eradicate them or they're going to come right back.
That's true.
They're like cockroaches. Big problem.
Although I'm not sure, is that totally clear to the Imperium in the very beginning? That orcs, if left unchecked, you know, the spores will create more orcs and whatever. And even the problem is even dead orcs will do that too. So
it is. They have a description of them riding down on jet bikes, riding down an orc convoy, and they go in and they shoot the crap out of it. They take it out. It's very Mad Max. You got, I think it was Jubal Khan jumping off of his jet bike as it explodes, glaive in hand to cleave orcs. He lands on top of the war truck, and then, you know, very Mad Max, starts cleaving orcs to pieces on the war truck. And at the end of that combat, they basically describe going through and burning every dead orc with either plasma or flamer, anything larger than a fist, they would burn everything to try and scorch out the spore of the orc. So they are aware at this point of how the orcs reproduce. So,
thank you.
Yep. So then what happens?
The Alpha Legion are trying to hide, but hide in plain sight. The White Scars took out the whole column of orcs that were kind of like a little fragment of a larger group. And
this is, I mean, yes, it's nice that they kill some White Scars, but it's not really pertinent to the story.
Right.
Well, pertinent is they get the notice to lift off. You've got something more important to do.
Sure. Right. I've been given extraction coordinates. They nod with approval. They'll be off this rock within the hour. And then they bail. And then we get another timestamp on the Drusilla Hive World, Hive Corona. And we find her mother had called her Zalma Gundy. And the only reason I know how to say that is because of the audiobook. because I had no idea how to read that. X-A-L-M-A-G.
Did you ever look up to see if it means something?
I did not. It looked like just a random string of letters, and so I didn't look it up. Did you look it up?
I did not.
Because it looked to me like a mismatch of like Solomon Grundy, and that's something.
Born on a Monday.
Oh, is that what it means?
That's Solomon Grundy, born on a Monday, married on a Tuesday, died on a Saturday. There's a whole thing. Solomon Grundy's an old children's rhyme that they stole and made him into a DC villain.
Bastardized.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she's a super powerful psyker. Apparently she has the ability to break things with her mind.
Quite a bit. She's super powerful. I mean, I don't know. They have psyker ratings. They discuss them sometimes. I think in like the Inquisitor series that Dan Abnett wrote. Why am I blanking on the name of his Inquisitors? The books Xenos and everything.
The problem that I have with this is the way that they describe her. Her unnatural gift had killed them all as a baby. Where is her birth?
She's born on this Hive world, isn't she?
They drove her out with stories of her past. They told Zamagundi of her horrific birth and how, as a screaming newborn, she had broken her mother from within, shattering bones and rupturing organs. Now, the problem that I have with this story is a baby like that would not survive.
Right. How would the baby get any food or whatever? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know,
we're gonna
this happens with all the Primarchs, and it happens even with, like, the Prince of Crows. They talk about him as, you know, I guess he was an orphan, though. I don't know. I don't know if it was an infant newborn that suddenly crawled off and whatever. But yes, how would she eat? How would she get water? How would she survive the elements? It's a little far-fetched. But anyhow, that doesn't make it any less cool.
Right. So she's basically an outsider because of her powers. Nobody wants her. Nobody wants her around for very long. So she keeps getting pushed further and further away from wherever she was born. As people learn who she is or what she does, she gets, you know, punted out of each one, and she migrates spireward in the hive, which is higher and higher. How she gets higher and higher in the hive, I don't know. But
she's a small child, you know, and also it's opposite of what normally happens. You know, normally freaks are pushed down, and she's traveling up.
Right. She travels further and further up. She winds up in an area of the hive that had basically been deserted because of some sort of plague. And she has a little fire going. She's, you know, got her section of the hive all to herself. Her camp had been in some kind of a villa once, the mansion hab of an Imperial Army officer or palace official. So she's in some pretty nice digs.
Previously,
even though everything around her is crumbling, because it's been abandoned for so long. While she's there, she starts feeling something she's felt once before, kind of a prickling on her skin and a pain in her head, almost like a headache. But she'd felt this once before. It was when the Silent Sisters had come to get her once before, and she'd killed them before. So now she knew they were coming again, and she goes to run, and there's a chase, because every, you know, great movie has to have a chase scene early on so you can get the adrenaline pumping. And Zamagundi goes running for her life, skiing down the side of the hive, because that's what you do when you're, like, you know, sliding like the Silver Surfer, I guess, down the side of the hive, trying to get away from the Silent Sisters. And who comes to her rescue but the Alpha Legion? The Alpha Legion shows up and shoots the Silent Sisters flyer out of the sky and puts all the rest of the Silent Sisters down. And we're met by a Alpha Legion operative who talks with her, and they start trying to get the band together.
Well, this is Sheed Renko, or at least he introduces himself as such.
Well, that's important. I'm trying to find that spot.
Yes, it does say, my name is Sheed Renko.
The voice came again, deep and measured. I assure you, we mean you no harm. And the first words out of her mouth are, rat crap. Now, was she saying rat crap because we mean you no harm, or was she saying rat crap because he said, my name is Sheed Renko?
These are all good questions. Yes. And also, you know, it doesn't talk about her as being telepathic so much as she's a strong telekinetic, and also not just telekinetic, but she's a chaos kinetic in some ways. You know, she just creates destruction with her mind. She throws things at things and takes things and destroys them. It's kind of a big deal, and it's kind of scary to watch because she actually has a lot of control considering she's young, untrained, and super powerful. Typically, those don't go well together.
No, she's like a nuclear bomb. They have a little brief conversation. They identify the units of Sisters of Silence that are there to take her out, and they basically come to an agreement. They fire a missile launcher and take out the flyer. It goes crashing down the side of the hive. So they know that, you know, she knows that they mean business. As, aren't you tired of being hunted? She
says, wait, before that, it says, Zalmagundi almost faltered and had to reach out to steady herself. She brought her attention back to the angel who called himself Sheed Renko. Let's cast a little doubt, shall we?
Yeah.
Then he's referred to as the angel left the wall of shadow with two of his hulking comrades. But Renko addressed her again. Aren't you tired of being hunted?
I can take care of myself, the psyker shot back savagely. Prove it, Renko challenged her. So Zalmagundi basically yanks a chunk off the spire and sends it crumbling down the side of the hive, which is just an awesome visual if you're thinking about it.
Yeah, that's right. This, you know, peak of the trash heap that is a hive snaps off, comes tearing down, tearing its way through, you know, how many layers, we're not even sure, but lots of ways down, and just, you know, it's a building falling. I mean, it is the top of a building falling and hitting everything on the way down. It's like, oh, well, that's kind of cool.
I'm sure.
And terrifying.
Thousands of people died.
Right.
Just from that
demonstration.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, a skyscraper getting ripped off of, you know, an even bigger skyscraper and sent crashing down. So.
Yeah, here we go. Every living soul within 50 kilometers would have heard the pulverizing boom of successive floors and constructs falling in on themselves. The spire was collapsing straight down like a black hole. Some irresistible gravitational force was dragging an avalanche of girders, buttresses, and crumbling stone downwards through the guts of the structure. That seems bad.
That could be worse.
I'm not sure how.
I don't know how, but it could be worse.
Yeah. Sure.
So, my word, it seems you can take care of yourself, Renko said to her, obviously impressed. Can you also take care of other things for other people, I wonder? And then the scene changes yet again. We move to San Sabrinas in DeSoto City. So.
Yep. So we're continuing getting the gang together, and now we are going after that tech priest, who is their key to getting into the installation. And basically they find out that he is doing some somewhat shady stuff, which again, the Alpha Legion should not be surprised by. They're pretty shady themselves.
Deal with shady people, they should expect shady stuff.
That's right.
I thought this was just kind of them showing off a little bit because it talks about how they have these basically covers that they can wear that change how they're seen in public.
Yeah.
And it's like
active camo.
Yeah. And they keep flipping back and forth and slipping them between themselves. So he keeps seeing the same person. So they pass by him from front to behind, but then they pass the veil off. And then he sees the same person pass from in front to behind again.
They freak him out. They freak him out horribly because first off, you know, they're observing him, but then they're basically sending him a message that we have you. And he's trying desperately to escape. I mean, he's going to get off world. He's getting out of there. And it's just like they surround him and they screw around with him for a little bit just to remind him that he's not above the Alpha Legion. That, you know, he may think he's got shady stuff going on, but not only do they know about it, they're here to have a conversation about it.
The other thing that I did think was kind of cool about this was that they eventually slipped their disguises onto his bodyguards.
Yes.
To make him run away from his own bodyguards.
Yes.
To make it easier for them to grab him. Like that's...
Yeah, he I mean, he's so freaked out at that point. They've played the psychological mind games with him that then he thinks his bodyguards are Alpha Legion and runs from them. And they're like, what the hell is going on? Where is he going?
Right.
And then the bodyguards probably meet an unfortunate end. I don't think they really go into that, but I don't think we see them again.
They're servitors. They're like stuntmen. They're disposable.
Right. Yeah, they're very, very off-camera disposable.
But they meet him, they get him, they snare him, and they basically say, you're going to come help us, because otherwise we're going to kill you. Because we know what you've been doing, and we don't like it.
And what he's been doing, actually, is mining some of this stone that is in use in the installation. So this is, at this time, again, we don't know it, but this is Blackstone. So he's trying to set up his own quiet version of this installation somewhere else.
To sell.
Yes.
Yes.
Possibly to the highest bidder. Because, you know, the thing about having a big war like the Heresy is somebody's going to be the winner at the end, and they're going to need stuff sold to them. So he's kind of profiteering off of the chaos of war. Unfortunately, he's doing it to the wrong chapter, or excuse me, the wrong legion.
Yeah, you don't double deal with the Alpha Legion. That's their job.
They triple and quadruple deal with you. Yeah, so, all right. So he gets caught, he's captured, and Omegon is talking to him in a very, we know what you're doing, you better stop it. You know, you think you're in charge here, you're not in charge, we're in charge. But also, you're going to help us go into the installation, and you really have no choice in the matter.
Right. The last line of that is, we are the Alpha Legion Volkern. Whether they know it or not, we always find a use for everyone.
Yes. Yeah, because he's begging for his life. He's like, I can still be useful. And they know. Of course you can be useful.
Sure you can.
We've already plotted that out for you, whether you like it or not. Now, there's a lot of flipping back and forth. So this is, again, part of our cool heist movie. We flip back and forth between the present action and the planning action. So you have the squad and you have the Psyker, although they put her in a nice power dampening collar so that she can't wreck the place. The last thing you want is this little chaos telekinetic getting cranky on a spaceship. That's going to end poorly for all involved. So they put her in a psychic collar and she basically kind of dozes through the planning meeting because that's not really important. They'll tell her what to do and she's got to do it. You have Shidrenko and Omegon and Squad Sigma and the Tech Priest, or Tech whatever he is. He's of the Mechanicum, but he's not exactly the most rigorous of Tech Priests from what we can read.
It's not a title that I recognized from any of the other Mechanicum.
No, yeah. Empire Artisan. I mean, yeah. He's got Mechanicum training. He's got implants and things like that, but he's not of the order, I guess. He's yeah. Ancillary.
So. Yeah, he has his specialty.
Yes. Yes, he does. We'll talk more about that in a second. So we flip back and forth between kind of the very arduous infiltration, and we'll talk about how they do that. But it's kind of cool because it's like we're sitting around this big round table, and it's round because everybody in the Alpha Legion is equal, even when one of them is a Primarch, and all ideas are weighed equally. There's nobody who is absolutely in command, although they all defer to Omegon the entire time. It's kind of silly. And so we have this cool kind of back and forth of, it's flashbacks, but it's very much of the moment that we're seeing the live action heisty things happening. So how do they get to Tenebrae Station, Glenn?
So they launch themselves out of a boarding torpedo from the Upsilon.
Which is weird. They name this boarding torpedo. I don't think that's a normal thing. Boarding torpedoes are very disposable.
Yeah, the Argolid.
Yeah.
Yes. And so they launched it from outside sensor range, turn off all propulsion, and it's just a killer shot. And, you know, boarding torpedoes, as most people know, they're designed to hit the cruiser, launch melta bombs, and blow a hole in it so they can now be inside. Well, they can't do that this time. They'll die. So what they do instead is they have it flying completely, everything turned off, with exception of their suits to give them some sort of atmosphere, but then launch a harpoon on a set of gears to slowly slow down the boarding torpedo as it makes its way to the underside or the backside of the Tenebrae asteroid.
Oh, we should talk about this. So this is on an asteroid, and it's picked out for a couple of things. One, location, 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 of course, real estate. But two, it has some special stuff going on that means most people would overlook it. And that is, and I think this may be the first time that they're mentioned in 30K, the Demiurge, who are basically kind of the retcon squats of things. They're miners. They don't show up in the story, but their robotic mining servants do. And they're basically pulling ore off this asteroid, And as long as the Tenebrae Station doesn't interfere with that, these droids pay them no mind. But they're right there, and so they're kind of would lead people to believe that that's all this is this asteroid is a demiurge. And they say they do this over a hundreds of year period. So these robots spend all this time mining, and the asteroid slowly goes on its way and then gets launched to the customer site, you know, generations after it started. It's really kind of crazy, the timeline.
Yeah. Please. Already fully broken down, yeah, and mined and ready to go.
Yep.
The other thing that I would like to point out is this is an incredibly difficult shot.
Yes.
Because the moon itself that the Tenebrae Station is on, or asteroid, large asteroid, whatever you want to call it.
That's a no moon, John.
It's spinning. It's moving in space. And the vessel that's firing the boarding torpedo is moving in space. And the boarding torpedo has to fly through all of that space, not deviate one bit, to be able to then slide down into the crack where they wanted to make their entry, so that they wouldn't impact on the surface. They would actually be able to slow down and then stop the boarding torpedo well inside this giant cavern on the moon itself.
And these things barely have any kind of steering capability. I mean, they're basically just a tube with an engine at the back. There's, like, in Battlefleet Gothic, you can get advanced boarding torpedoes that can make a 45-degree turn, I think, once. Otherwise, they shoot one direction only and go there until they leave the table edge or they hit something.
Yeah, they didn't have the luxury. It did say that they could have done a adjustment, but they didn't have the luxury, because if they'd have done any kind of burn,
right,
they would have got picked up by sensors.
Yep, they might be noticed. So yeah, there's a lot of moving parts, and they talk about that this is a really difficult thing to do, and they take pride in that. They actually are like, yeah, if we could pull that off, we'd be amazing. And we know we are.
Now, there's a couple other times in the Heresy that they actually use this same tactic. I remember one of them happens during the invasion of Terra.
Yep.
And they reference another, when they're doing that one, they reference one of the previous ones.
I think they're called deadfall torpedoes at that point, where they basically are unpowered and they sit there for a long time and then finally power up and shoot in.
Yeah, it's a Sons of Horus, I think, tactic.
But yeah, that was the whole ship. That wasn't just a torpedo.
Where the basically the ship itself is powered, yes, completely down.
Right.
They think that it's just dead.
Dead.
And
come
all
out
of a sudden dead. It powers up, and holy crap, they're right on our doorstep. So
right.
Anyhow.
All right. So Omegon and the squad, they disembark their torpedo, and they notice how close they actually were to terminal death. I mean, they were very close, but it turned out to be just perfect. So Omegon and the squad, they disembark, and they're in absolute darkness. They got to use their suit lamps. There's no gravity. And they have to go through this cavern and try to make their way to the underside of the Tenebrae installation. Now, since there is no gravity, there is...
Or there's light gravity.
Yeah, it's light gravity.
Yeah, there is no... There's nothing to stop any kind of earthquake or rock slide or anything like that. And they encounter problems. Like, they had to take their own backpacks off and shove each other through parts that are tight and then come back out and reestablish everything. And they even lost one of their warriors being crushed by the asteroid compressing.
Yeah, it actually said basically tectonically active due to the mining operations. So the asteroid itself is against them.
Right.
Not actively. I mean, it's not maliciously trying to kill them, but it's dangerous and it's not intended to be anybody out there. And so as they're sneaking their way across, you know, they came in on the bottom. They're sneaking their way up to the top, effectively. And yes, I realize there's no top and bottom in space. But from the one end of the asteroid where they could come in unseen to the base station itself, it takes some effort, takes a lot of work. And they talk through how they're going to do it, what the challenges are. Don't mess with the robots. I mean, the minute they mess with the robots, that's going to be a big problem. Or is it?
Right. So their objective here is to get to a lower door that they had arranged to have built in, like an airlock built in, so that they could gain access to the lower portion of the Tenebrae assembly. And in doing so, they would then gain access to what they need next, which is Zalmagundi.
And they have a man inside to do just that.
Right.
And it's our friend.
The Artisan Emperor.
Right, the tech priest-ish guy whose name, Argurimus.
Argoramus.
Damn it, I'm going to get it right the fifth time or so.
They're like ignoramus, but it's, not
yes,
quite.
Except it augurs well with his ignoramusness.
With a little bit of editing, we can sound like we know what we're doing.
A lot of editing.
The one thing that I will say about this, which I thought was really hardcore, and I remember this from the first time I read the story, the one Marine got crushed to death, and they were trying really hard to save him. They describe how they, you know, reached out, grabbed his hand, and then a couple of Marines were trying to pull him out, including Omega. And he died, but he died silently. He didn't open his mouth as he was getting crushed to death.
He just grunted once.
He grunted once, and they knew he was in trouble, and was allowed himself to be crushed to death without saying a word. That's pretty hardcore.
And then Omegon does battle sign to Statebos, the price we pay for unannounced entry.
Yeah. And that's a really good point, too. It also, the death of that one guy changes their plans a little bit, because everybody's got a very specific role to play, and losing anybody changes how things are going to work out. I mean, it's that tight that there's so few of them, and they're going up against, they estimate, they're not even 100% sure, 50 Alpha Legionnaires on board, and they don't even know how many human auxiliaries.
Right.
I was reminded of the movie The Dirty Dozen.
Yeah.
There's a point during that movie where one of the crew dies, and then the rhyme changes, and you know so and so has takes the tower, and they just changed, you know, the next person's name jumps in the line. So I'll edit that out because that's a piece of shit.
Well, if you had the specifics, it'd be a little better, but it's all right. Moving
Whatever.
On.
Yes. So then what happens?
So we pass by the mining robots. We set up some charges. We basically are ready to have the place explode. And we wonder if that's going to be how they take out the station itself. But it turns out that that's not exactly what they had in mind. But we won't learn about that until later.
Right. And then we jump back to the Upsilon, where the group is looking at and planning how they're going to get in. And this is where they talk about they're going to need a airlock. We can dig a little deeper. You know, we can do what we need to do. And Zamagundi's fallen asleep at the table. She found it very, you know, relaxing having the collar on, as opposed to, it could be in some instances where it can be very, very painful to have a power dampening collar on.
For her. Yeah, she's never her entire life had her powers not, you know, overwhelming her. And this is the first time. And it's like, ooh, that's kind of nice.
Being able to turn this thing off. All right.
Right. And we learned that the Tenebrae is actually a Alpha Legion base clearance level Vermilion.
I don't know what that is, but it sounds important.
Yeah, I couldn't find anything on it at all. I looked it up and there was nothing.
What's that from Paranoia, John?
Are you clear for yellow gum?
Infrared, red, ultraviolet red.
Right.
Yeah. Are you cleared for that, Gums?
Roy G. Biv. Yeah. They talk about what's there, and it says they've got a garrison of 50 legionnaires, clearance Vermilion, and an Imperial Army Sentry Force, 1/4 battalion of the Geno 760 Spartacid. Then they go on to say the 760 are a well-drilled regiment. So Geno 760 Spartacid, that's very similar to the Geno, 550 Chiliad or something like that, which is the ones from Legion.
And they're part of the original 100 legions that took part in, was it the Liberation of Terra or the beginning of the Great Crusade?
I believe it's the beginning of the Great Crusade.
Okay.
But the special thing about them is that they've all been altered. They're not exactly humans. They're
upgraded.
Yeah, they're upgraded in different ways.
Genetically modified, but they're not Marines either.
No, they're not Marines, but they basically got some of the gifts that the Marines also got, just as a lower version of them, I would think. But they've got upgrades, so they're dealing with not regular Imperial Army. They're dealing with, you know, better than that. Of course, it's Alpha Legion.
That's right.
So okay. One of them asked, why don't we stage an inspection? Omegon said they need to keep this entirely off the books. No one can know anything. We need to make this thing go out like a light.
Yes. We don't want it gone. We want it so that, like, it never existed.
Yeah.
That's a big thing. I mean, that takes extra effort. I mean, They talk about this. They could have had it bombarded from a ship. They could have done all these things to destroy it, but all of that would have had some record somewhere that it existed, that something was destroyed. They don't want to have a record of something destroyed. They want no record that it ever was a thing anywhere, ever. They want it off the books, deleted, erased. So, and that takes extra work, and here we are doing the work.
One line that I like about this was, what about the installation's imports, Tarquist asked. Cargo crates, ammunition drums. I got aboard the 3rd Legion flagship in a bombardment shell case before Istvan. It's like, I want to hear that story. Yeah. I want to know what he was there to do.
Right. Because
he was on board the 3rd Legion flagship. That's saying something. Of course, the Emperor's children, I think at that point, were, a little bit distracted by, fucking their servants and stuff. I don't know.
They had some issues at that point.
Bunch of pansies.
They can still fight. All right, so they finally make it to the bottom, and they break in. And the reason that they're able to get in at least partly undetected is because the tech priest has basically taken into the security area and has started unlocking doors for them and turning off monitoring and things.
Yeah, he's their guy on the inside.
Right. So they melt a bomb the bottom, and they go in, and it's basically not... conditioned space. They basically come into an area that's only for occasionally being checked out. I guess when the way the base sits there, it kind of drills itself into the rocks. I think that's correct. And so periodically they have to come down and make sure that it's well
anchored.
Thank you. That's the right word.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
But most of the time nobody's down here. This is not like they're not expecting anybody to burr their way in from beneath.
Yeah. And then also, melted bombs going off, they won't think too much of it because there's all kinds of volcanoes, all kinds of earthquakes and stuff.
Yeah, because of the mining operations that are going on across the asteroid, there are seismic, disruptions all the time. So that kind of stuff is easily dismissed even by the Alpha Legion in their notorious paranoia.
And then the killing starts.
Yes. So they come through, and the first thing they come across, of course, are humans, because, that's much easier to put humans out on a terrible guard job, and the Alpha Legion just do periodic and completely random, at least on paper, checks on things. So the humans are there all the time. The Alpha Legion are there some of the time. And we're lucky to get there without any Alpha Legion, so we can start killing our way through humans first. And basically, they have to work their way up and get to where Zalmagundi is being held. And she has been basically infiltrated by the Mechanicum guy into the stock of slave psychers. I'm not quite sure how they got her to agree to this. I'm guessing it had a lot to do with her being kind of drowsy and wearing the psychic dampener, because, the last thing ordinarily what she would agree to would be to be captive, even though she's working for them. I mean, this is a big ask. This is, you're going to go in wearing your psychic dampener, and you're going to be thrown in with all these slave psychers who are also wearing dampeners and worse. I mean, they talk about some of the stuff that these guys are being put through, and you're going to be treated like an animal or worse until we come and break you out, and then you get to do cool stuff. It's kind of a heavy ask. It's kind of like, okay, kid, this is going to suck for a while, but eventually it's going to be cool, okay?
The one thing you've been trying not to have happen your entire life,
we're going to make you do that, yes.
Yeah.
Well, we've already, kind of covered a couple of leaps of logic here.
Yeah, why not?
Plot holes you could drive a truck through. But hey, we're going to go with it.
The cage that Zalmagundi's in does not keep her nice and calm. It is painful, and they use it to get you from one cage to another. Because if you leave the bad cage, maybe the next one won't be as bad. And so they said it's a very effective way of getting their psychers to move. But once Omegon finds her and frees her, no holds barred.
Yeah, yep.
Game on.
And Omegon has the Artisan Emphyr go ahead and warn Escheon that there's a problem.
Yes. The psychers are basically being freed and in full revolt, which is true. It just wasn't true yet.
Right.
But it does cause quite a chaos. I mean, that's how you fight your 9 guys with a Primarch. I mean, that's kind of like a leg up versus... 50 plus, what do we say, a quarter company? How many of the humans?
Yeah, quarter battalion.
Quarter battalion. So that's like 400?
That's a lot of guys.
It's a lot of guys. So you need a force multiplier for that. Zalmagundi's one of them, but how about all the rest of those psychers? They're probably mad about what's going on and happening to them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing about it too, is once they take that collar off of Zalmagundi to another psyker, she's going to shine like a light.
Right.
Yep. So as soon as they do that, Escheon's going to know something's up. But in the chaos of opening all the other cells, she's just one light among many. Of course, she's a bright one, but still, you know, all of a sudden there's a whole lot of lights down where there shouldn't be, and Escheon knows something's up.
It's kind of like somebody's gone into the zoo and started opening up all the cages. That's a terrible thing to say about human beings, but it's kind of true here, because these psychers have been abused, mistreated, you know, malnourished, or whatever else. They talk about some of them being almost skeletal, and they're pissed.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, they're not exactly soldiers, and they're just as much of a threat to the infiltrating Alpha Legion as they are to the rest of them. But luckily, there's not a ton of infiltrating Alpha Legion, so they can sort of stay out of the line of fire, which we see a little bit.
Yeah, we see that Escheon is with another Space Marine, and Zalmagundi just crushes him from the inside, just pulps him inside, yes, of his inside of his armor. And Escheon's like, what in the world's going on? And next thing he knows, he's being thrown all over the place. And then thrown into a cage.
Yep.
And inside the cage, he's trying to call Janik. I need help. I need help. But it's not getting through. And Omegon's inside the cage with him. Right. Not going to end well for our friend Escheon.
At least he gets explained, you know, what happens. He gets the revelation that he's failed the Legion and that he's being executed because of that failure. Although it doesn't entirely make sense. He gets an opportunity to know what happens before he dies. I mean, some Alpha Legions are just killed outright. Alpha Legionnaires are killed without any idea what's going on. At least he gets to see what's happening and then dies. I'm not sure that makes a big difference, but it's still a thing.
And also, it gives him the, you know, honor of dying to his own Primarch.
Again, I'm not sure there's an honor to that.
Well, from some of the other stories, we know that it's very difficult for a Legionnaire to raise arms against their Primarch. We saw that with Angron and the War Leader or Warhounds. We saw that with Fulgrim and his men. I forget what the guy's name was, but that's just an awful, awful scene where Fulgrim pulls the sword out and basically buries it in the guy as he's kneeling in front of him. There's a bunch of different times where the Primarch goes against their own men, and their own men won't even take up a hand against them, won't even defend themselves. So that may be part of it. Of the group, he was probably the best one besides Zalmagundi to deal with Escheon.
Yes, and he does. But and I'm jumping ahead a little bit. It's not all fun and games, because they meet the person that they were kind of most afraid of defending the base there.
Janik.
Mm-hmm. Well, you don't meet Janik until, you know, Omegon needs to go down to where they keep the navigators, the telepaths, to...
Oh, right. Yes. So that's part of that was a thing that, again, because somebody died.
Died. Right.
Omegon is forced to go and silence the astropaths. Doesn't want any of them screaming out something to warn that they're under attack. At this point, the Alpha Legion know that it's other Alpha Legion doing this. You know, it's become clear that they've been infiltrated by their own kind, and there's, you know, shenanigans afoot. But as long as the astropaths don't get a message out, no one else is going to know that.
It's still quiet, yeah.
Right.
Right. But Janik has been leaving things off of, or left things off of, the plans that they sent to Omegon. Like, there's a route to get from point A to point B that's not on there, where there should be the resting areas for troops. It's not there. Secret passages to where the navigators are aren't there.
Yeah. Yes. So a lot of their pre-planning proves for naught, because there have been changes made, or just the plans that they had were never right to begin with. They're not clear which.
Secrets and lies.
Right. Craziness. So Janik has done a better job than they ever even thought he would, and they knew he was going to be good, but he proved out to be better. And he basically almost kills Omegon. He kind of gets the drop on him and puts a couple of rounds into him, and almost puts him down. I mean, it's a serious moment or two between you know, the great reveal and Omegon going, okay, now I can stop this man.
Right, but Janik was only trying to do warning shots on Omegon, not knowing who he is.
In his chest.
Through the side, didn't hit any major arteries, hit his spine, where Janik could have just killed him. Yes, but Janik needs answers. He's trying to figure out what the world's going on.
Right.
And why have you done
this? There is his downfall.
He wanted somebody to get interrogated.
Yeah, right. That's right. If he had just, you know, executed him, he would have got to live.
Maybe, maybe not. I mean, if the Omegon tells the trooper from Sigma Squad to go ahead and blow the charges, that guy might have done it anyways once he didn't get any confirmation from Omegon.
Right.
Because he knew it needed to be destroyed.
Yeah, he might have had a standing order.
Right. There again, Janik might have been able to put his helmet on if Omegon wasn't holding it.
So there's another X factor again.
Omegon needed a helmet.
Yeah,
he already was wearing his helmet.
There's nine of us, and there's, well, 10 of us, whatever. There's not many of us versus all these other people. So the psychers are one way we have a force multiplier. How else can we have a force multiplier? Hey, if we upset those mining machines, they're going to come after the base, right? And sure enough.
Right.
Yeah,
they set off the charges. It interferes with the mining. The mining robots get angry and come to attack the base to fix this problem they're having with interference.
One by one, the squad gets picked off slowly as they achieve their mission goals or not. Eventually, we're left with a couple of them falling back to the shuttle bay. And their orders are to basically go in there, kill everybody, and destroy all of the vehicles, last one, all the landers.
No one can escape from the base.
Right. And make a spot where Sheed Ranko can land to pick us back up.
Right.
Right. And so. Zamagundi's to aim the asteroid at the nearest star to make it so it will be gone, wiped out.
Which is crazy that she's that powerful. And she does strain to do that. I mean, it does say that that's not something that she's ever done before on something that scale. Even though, you know, she wrecked part of that hive city, this is still a big deal for her, and it drains her heavily to do it and to realign the asteroid to head it for the star. And this, again, is after she's wrecked every flying thing that they have in the hangar bay. She's been busy, this girl.
It reminded me of the scene in Bruce Almighty where he, you know, drags the moon a little closer.
Didn't see it. Can't help.
Yes. Yeah, he said he lassoed it and pulled it in closer. But it cost her. Her eyes ruptured, burned up, whatever you want to call it. It cost her a lot to do what they needed her to do.
Yes.
And
but she did it.
Yeah, she did it. And Omegon, injured, barely makes it to where they're at. And she asks if, you know, can your people fix my eyes? And he tells her yes.
Of course we could.
Down through her head.
That's right. As he
We're not going there. To fix them, but we could have fixed them. Yes.
Can your people fix me?
So.
She asked the wrong question.
Yeah.
What you can you? Yes. Are you going to? Absolutely not.
No.
Yeah. The sergeant, Statebos, asks Omegon, where is Ranko? Where's our transport? And
here it comes. Here's the big swerve.
Disengages and tosses helmet into the dust. And Sheed Ranko regarded Statebos and the Sigma Squad with his own eyes. The Legionnaire stared at the captain in mute disbelief. A greater game, Ranko repeated. The captain could still taste his Primarch's blood. Omegon had mixed a little of his shed vitality with the wine the pair had taken on the Upsilon, an offering of the Primarch's thanks, and much more. He had tasted the remembrance and come to know the secrets of his gene sire, early days spent by the twins on their distant homeworld, scheming their way to supremacy, the paradoxical horror of the ancient acuity.
You know, I'm not sure thanks is the right word. Why are all the Alpha Legion missions suicide missions?
Secrets and lies.
Secrets and lies. So there's more to it. I mean, this is the end. This is the climax of the story. There's nothing coming for them. They're going to die with the station, and no one will know that they were ever there. And they won't be around to tell anybody. So everybody's going out and being erased, effectively. Before we get to the finality to this, let's talk about that. That's a thing. I mean, the secrets and lies. He sent all these men on a suicide mission for what? Because he wanted it to be so secretive that he was willing to sacrifice, you know, the captain of the first company. That's a big deal. I mean, let's think about other first company captains. That's Sevatar. That's Raldoran. Mm-hmm. That's Abaddon. I mean, these are heroes of the heresy on both sides. And he's throwing this guy away on kind of an errand that seems not that big a deal. It's so crazy to me to see how willing they are for the cause, because they so believe in this. Obviously, Sigma Squad didn't get a choice.
Right. But
she'd never questioned for a second that he was going on the suicide mission, posed as Omegon himself, and we see that all the way to the very end. We think he's an Omegon. Right. And B, you know, for what? He doesn't even know why he's doing this ultimately.
Well, he does now because of the memories.
Right. Well, I guess. That's a good question.
He might have a better understanding of why he's doing it, because of the shared blood and the,
right.
What is it, omophagia or something like that? The gland that allows the Marines to digest the blood and then get the memories.
That only works on brains.
Not for the Alpha Legion. But what is a captain to the Alpha Legion when all you have to do is give one of the Primarchs blood to one of their warriors, and now they're a Primarch?
My name is Alpharius. It's just that to me still, though, is so crazy that he's willing. They succeed in their goals. They meet their mission. It's a suicide mission. Only one of them knew it was a suicide mission. They're willing to kill this super powerful Psyker, who probably, frankly, is for the best that she's dead.
She's just an asset, though.
And certainly the Alpha Legion have assets all across the universe. I mean, we see that in lots of books. There are tons of humans who work for the Alpha Legion who are very nasty, very skillful, and super manipulative and everything else, and not Marines.
Right.
And again, they're completely willing to burn them because they're willing to kill their first company captain. Ugh, it's so
everyone's expendable.
Everyone. And they ask of you everything.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to the epilogue.
There's an epilogue?
There's an epilogue.
John. Okay. So we're back on the Legion Battle Barge Beta. The command deck of the Beta was quiet. Officers and retainers went about their business calmly and professionally. There was little indication that the Alpha Legion Battle Barge had just launched a massive orbital bombardment, and that a crater-dashed mountain range on the planet below was about to be leveled. We find Alpharius and Omegon there, and they have a little conversation, and it goes on just a little bit further. He explains that he interrogated Augurimus himself, and they basically...
Yeah, this was the backup that he was setting up. This was going to be where he was setting up his own version of Tenebrae Station on this world. And so, because of this, because of the act of this rogue Mechanicum guy, they burn the entire world lest anybody find out about it.
That he uses Augurimus as his patsy and blames Augurimus for the disappearance of the pylon array on the Tenebrae installation. So
we don't mention this. Augurimus dies with everybody else on the Tenebrae array. I mean, he's
right.
He does not have any more luck than anybody else in this story.
Right. And the Alpha Legion also has to go and destroy the unfinished pylon array that Augurimus was building on Parabellus.
Yep.
Tell the captain that as soon as the Alpha has joined us, to set a secondary course for the Chondax system. Chondax, Omega asked, a little surprised. The Khan, but what of the original plan? Somebody's interested in Tenebrae, I'm sure of that, Alpharius muttered. Our navigators tell us the immateriology in that region is calming. Our astropaths believe that messages might get through once more. Our operatives report that the White Scars expeditionary fleet has almost completed its compliance and that the Khan could soon make preparations for warp transit. He says, we don't know. And Alpharius says, we do. Perhaps it's Malkador or the Angels of Caliban. Someone has gotten to the Tenebrae installation. We must accept that and move on. We must read the moves ahead of time and position the fleet to the greatest advantage. Dorne will recall the White Scars, and the Khan's loyalty is still firm. If the War Master is to succeed, then we cannot allow the 5th Legion to reach Terra. Are we in agreement, brother? Of course, said Omega, nodding slowly. Aren't we always?
Dot, dot, dot.
And then it goes even a little bit further. And Omegon goes into his own personal chamber. And if we get a little bit of a glimpse into Omegon's personal cell, dormitory cell. And it makes a mention of a gray suit of armor in the corner. His operational plate. His arming cabinet was open. And his operational plate, a suit indistinguishable from that of any other Alpha Legionnaire, sat on its reinforced frame. His bolt gun, blade, and pistol were displayed also, as well as his helmet, which seemed to fix him with the dead gaze of his blank optics. Beside it, covered by a loose shroud, was his other suit of armor. To the casual eye, it was plain and unadorned.
And so, then, pause just a second. What do you make of that?
So, I took that as a blank suit of armor. It mentions during the... Help me out here. It's the thing that almost wiped out the Dark Angels.
I mean, that's every hope and dream I've ever had.
Yeah, no kidding. it's the one that they blame one of the Primarchs dying on. Glenn, you and I talked about it. We'll have to edit this out a little bit.
You mean one of the second and the 18th or whatever?
The Rangan Xenocides.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So during the Rangan Xenocides, the Dark Angels went from being basically one of the most numerous legions to on par with everybody else. They took horrible casualties during the Rangan Xenocides. And there's a reference there that's where they lost one of the either the second or the 11th. I don't know which one.
Well, one was forgotten and one was purged, I thought.
Yeah.
So the forgotten one may be the one that died there. Maybe. Right. I don't know. But the only thing that came to mind when I read this, the unadorned, was like Malkador's guys, his knights errant, wearing unadorned armor.
You would think. But
if Omegon is actually Alpharius and he was indeed the first Primarch found, he would probably have blank armor, so no one would know what legion he was part of.
In the beginning.
In the very beginning.
I don't know.
Where I was going with that was that there's a reference where during the Rangan Xenocides, a warrior showed up claiming to be called Alpharius in gray, unadorned armor. Mm. And basically was like, no, you've got to do this. If you don't do this, a lot of people are going to die.
Interesting. Do you know what that's from? Is that from one of the black books?
Because
I don't think I've read that at all. I know, the rough outlines of that. That war, and I know it was like hugely costly to the early Imperium, and that's before the Lion was found, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
That's like all Terraborn Dark Angels not wiped out, but severely reduced.
Right.
So, and I'm pretty sure the Iron Warriors are there too, the 4th Legion, pre-Perturabo.
Right. I'm trying to read the mention here, it's online. This represents a discrepancy of some 30 sidereal years. Self-proclaimed Alpharius, commander of the 20th Legion forces, before the discovery of their Primarch, arrived in the prescribed Rangdan extermination zone and offered to help the Lion, whose legion was badly depleted by the war.
Oh, it is up to the Lion. Okay.
So,
does it give a reference? Does it say where it's from?
I'm looking.
Okay. Because I say that's what we read next.
Nice.
Although I have previously said the next thing we read is going to be Iron Warriors because... That's my first love.
Oh, we could. I just read Ironfire. I hadn't found that one before, and I gave it a read. So,
well, then I've read that.
It picks up from the one of the players from the end of the one we just talked about.
Callan.
What?
Callan? Dalarn?
No, the Shadenhold.
Oh, Shardenhold. Oh, okay.
Shardenhold.
Okay.
The bad guy, the evil mustache twirling guy from that one.
I don't remember his name, but yes, I know what you're talking about. The warsmith that says hand it over.
Yeah, that guy.
Nope.
And the dreadnought says nah.
I got you, fam. All right. So I think we've noodled around a lot. So, all right, what do we learn here at the end? Alpharius posing as Omegon because they've switched roles. They've switched Alpharius as Omegon, Omegon as Alpharius. One of them is good, one of them is evil, or at least not, you know, good and evil may not be the right things. Horus and the Emperor, and then they have the guidance of Hell, the group that they meet in
the Cabal.
The Cabal. Thank you. The Cabal, who is theoretically they're both working for, but maybe they're working for the Cabal at cross purposes for the War Master, for the Emperor. Man, it's so many layers. And again, and this is a question that we can't answer, but how do they eventually turn full chaos in the 40th millennium if they are led by, if Omegon dies in the 30K, if he dies in
Praetorian
of Thorn, right?
Right.
And it appears that it's Alpharius who dies, but it's Omegon.
Right.
If Alpharius lives, and we don't know how he dies later, that has yet to be revealed to us, but the Alpha Legion goes full chaos, and we're actually talking about some 40K Alpha Legion stuff that is a really good read, and how nasty and infiltrating they are in that. Anyway.
Yeah, but they never go into the warp. So.
Right. But they continue the long war from all across the galaxy, whereas a lot of the traitor legions are pushed, or are pushed into the Eye of Terror, and then come back with a vengeance later.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, after they fall on each other.
I think the Alpha Legion are going to use every single thing to their advantage, and so they're at least a good portion of them are trying to use chaos to their advantage.
I think it's more to that. I think it's just duplicity. I think that one Primarch sided with Horus, the other one sided with the Emperor, and the one that sided with Chaos, the guys that were more loyal to him, fell to Chaos eventually. We've seen in the Dreams of Unity, we've seen a possessed Alpha Legionnaire. We've also seen, you know, loyal or seemingly loyal Alpha Legions, Legionnaires.
Certainly they play a big role in the Siege of Terror.
Yes, Siege of Terror. The reference is from First Legion by Chris Raitt. It says something along the lines of, like, basically in the sixth year of the reign Danzina side, this guy shows up. So claiming to be Alpharius, and he's wearing gray armor, unadorned. That being said, the reason that this happened, the reason that Omegon decided to destroy, or Alpharius decided to destroy the Tenebrae installation, you got to think about what they were doing at this point. So if the Tenebrae installation had not been allowed to be destroyed, the Alpha Legion would have tied up two legions at this point. They've got the White Scars basically hemmed in at Chondax, right. And the Alpha Legion, their job was, after the Space Wolves basically expended themselves wiping out the Thousand Suns, tying that asset up, they then moved away to then repair and rearm. Well, that's when they got attacked and cornered by the Alpha Legion at the Alaxes Nebula. So one legion, the Alpha Legion, is tying up two Loyalist legions, and the Space Wolves have basically taken out a third Loyalist legion, which then tilts the odds deeply in Horus's favor by destroying.
There's already three legions out of action by his work too. I mean, Salamanders, Iron Hands, and Raven Guard are beyond decimated. I mean, they're shattered at this point. Hey, right. That's a thing.
Right. And the Blood Angels, they're off in the far reaches or eastern fringe of space or whatever it was.
So it's Horus's war to lose. And it's even worse. I mean, at this stage, it's the worst it could be for the Emperor stuff. They're on the wrong foot the hardest at this stage of the war.
So by destroying the Tenebrae installation, the Alpha Legion then has to split their forces. They leave some to try and harry the Space Wolves and keep them penned in. But they also have to send everything they can find that can float a gun to try and hold the White Scars in at Chondax. And there's even some reference in the Scars book that basically Jagatai takes one look at some of the ships arrayed against them and goes, that's a transport ship. that's not a battle barge.
Right.
So he recognizes that they're basically they're faking it. So
a very Alpha Legion thing to do.
Hey, you know, if it plays the part and it looks good enough from 10 feet away, sure. So
well, you know, X ships are a thing too. I mean, that's a whole other thing. To take a transport and strap guns on it, it's not going to fight like a warship, but at least it's got guns.
It'll at least take some firepower away from the other stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah, we can escape through there until the transport explodes and kills everyone aboard, all the other ships around it.
Yeah. What are you gonna do?
It's like there's a blockade directly in front of us. Let's just fly above it. It's space.
Well, yeah, that does make some of the blockades a little bit silly.
Yeah.
Three-dimensional space is very hard to stop people from going places.
Yep.
You know, all right, one more thing, one more stretch of credulity about this. Who taught Zalmagundi how to talk? Not only, you know, would she have died from exposure, lack of food and water, but she's got a pretty good command of the language.
She might have lifted it. That might be one of her powers. She might have lifted it off of the people around her.
Telepathy? Yeah, I suppose. But
possible.
You know, yeah, there's a lot. They gloss over a lot there. This is a great story. I mean, I'm not taking anything away from the story.
Mm-hmm.
But some of it, you know, again, in the heist movie setup of things, is a little bit far-fetched.
Everything worked just right.
Yeah. Yep.
Hey, I like the movie. I stayed to the end credits. I wanted to see if they'd do anything more.
That's right.
And they did. You had Omega walking around in this chamber going, yeah, there's my other armor.
And agreeing that he and Altharius are always of the same mind.
Well.
When they're not.
Secrets and lies.
Secrets and lies.
Now they're keeping secrets from each other.
And for how long? I mean, clearly, this is not the first time. All right. So we don't know what we're going to talk about next time. I'm going to pick it, but I don't know what it's going to be yet. Because John picked... Or no! Let's see. John picked the first one. I picked the second one. Glenn picked the third one.
Correct.
Yeah, it's my turn. I like it. I'm sure the math works somehow.
2 + 1 + 2 + 1. What?
+1 + 1.
John can be easily overwhelmed by numbers, so it's words. It's a thing. All right.
A pretty picture.
We appreciate you spending the last hour and a half or so, magic of editing, 5 minutes with us. And we hope you join us next time when we'll be talking more Heresy stuff on the Legion of Three.
If you're one of our 7 listeners. Hi, Mom.
Hi, Mom. Bye-bye.
Bye.
See ya.